Tar Heel Talk, 97.9 The Hill, Blake Hodge alongside Inside Carolina's Ross Martin, as always, and got a treat for you, Jones Angel, the voice of the Tar Heels, coming up later on in the program. But Ross, what's going on, man? You've got a lot going on, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Trying to process everything that you've seen over the past couple of days with Carolina athletics.
Yeah, kind of like
what's going on?
Kind of like a break here for those who cover the team. 11 days off for UNC and exams. We're back in action on Sunday in Knoxville. A great matchup for UNC, good Tennessee team that's beaten state, have some wins over some other competitive teams, and it's going to be the toughest test since the Michigan State game for UNC, and it's an away game in a hostile environment with a fan base that's pretty rowdy and packs the stadium when they have a good team.
It's a basketball school.
Yeah. Finally got a head football coach, too, so that's good for the Volunteers. So it should be a good matchup, and it's, 3 o'clock on a Sunday with NFL football going on, but a lot of eyes will be on that for the ESPN broadcast. That's kind of what we're preparing for now. Not much has changed. Seventh Woods is out.
Seventh Woods is out
for
an extended period of time.
Yeah, he's got a broken foot. It's on crutches, apparently.
The biggest thing that happened in the basketball world didn't involve Carolina, but impacted Carolina in the way that they moved up in the AP poll. A few spots up to seventh now, I believe it is, after Duke lost to Boston College to open up their ACC play. And Kai Bowman and John Robinson and a couple of North Carolina guys that played really well against the Tar Heels last year, and this is the part where you can do your Kai Bowman drop if you want to.
Yeah, I mean, Kai Bowman was committed to UNC as a wide receiver for football out of Havelock High School in Havelock, North Carolina. And the guy's a baller in basketball. I mean, people thought he would be a football guy at Carolina. He decommitted, wanted to play basketball, and Boston College took him. And now he's starring in the ACC and one of the best guards in the ACC.
Yeah.
Obviously proved it against UNC last year. Had an injury and is obviously back in action and balling now for the Eagles with that huge game against Duke. It's crazy that those talented players could leave the state with Duke, Wake, NC State, and Carolina within the borders.
Just imagining both of them at state in particular. I mean, it's hard to question any types of decisions that Carolina and Duke have made in terms of their rosters. Wake Forest has had a couple of really good players coming through, but you could see them playing there as well. But, it's one of those things that people kind of develop at different rates, but also it's not like Kai Bowman and John Robinson average those numbers against everybody else in the ACC. They definitely turn it up a little bit playing against teams from North Carolina.
Seems like they want to kind of prove the home state universities that they missed out on them.
But this Clemson or Tennessee game, I was looking at their schedule. They opened the season with a victory against Carson Newman and then went to Clemson and knocked off the Tigers down there 71-67. A couple of other kind of rollover games for the Tennessee Volunteers, but then they end up, they get a victory over Purdue, who was ranked, and Villanova, now ranked number one in the country. They really had a back-and-forth game with them where they had the lead for a bit. This will be a big-time test. What are you looking for the most, I guess, from a road performance from this Carolina team?
You guys see how they react to the road environment and a tougher team, because the last time they played a team that was of a high caliber was Michigan State, and they got dominated. So the freshman big men have to take a step forward and prove they can defend the athletic players that Tennessee's going to have. They can be a force down low and contribute more and be less of a liability like they were against the Spartans in Portland. And just, Luke May and Kenny Williams have to be there and produce unlike they did against Michigan State. And I think UNC, is probably going to be favored in this game. It's probably going to be a close spread. But UNC has the better team, I think, on paper. So just playing up to that level and not getting frustrated or, have issues with the crowd and playing on a road team would be the thing that I'm looking at. But it should be a very exciting environment on Sunday. I think the big thing to notice now, to talk about is Jahleek Felton. Stepping up, and we'll talk about more about him with Jones Angel coming up. But Seventh Woods is out, so Jahleek Felton is your number two point guard for UNC, and he's shown some flashes, and we get more chances to prove what he can do. And I think that's going to help him perform, getting in the flow of the offense, knowing that he's not going to get pulled out as early if he makes a mistake, and knows that he is the guy behind Joel Berry. He's going to get you know, 10 to 18 minutes a game regardless because he's going to have to do that.
Jones Angel, voice of the Tar Heels, coming up next on Tar Heel Talk, 97.9 The Hill. Welcome back, Tar Heel Talk, 97.9 The Hill. Blake Hodge alongside Inside Carolina's Ross Martin, as always, talking a little Carolina basketball, and we'll talk about football a little bit as well here in the next few minutes. We've got the early signing period, which is new this year. We'll get Ross's perspective on that, but excited to bring in the voice of the Tar Heels, Jones Angel, to join us today on Tar Heel Talk. Jones, thanks so much for making some time for us.
Oh, man, always enjoy talking with you guys, and nice to have a little bit of a break here for the Tar Heels. It has been such a busy last couple of weeks with football, of course, winding up the season, basketball getting going and playing so much in such a short amount of time, and nice to catch our breath this week before what is another really busy stretch for Carolina, playing three good teams in 6 days before they take a holiday break. So glad to be with you guys.
Yeah, and UNC's coming off 4 games in 7 days and then 10 games in 27 days. Really kind of talked about that and the scheduling there. But kind of jumping right into it, Jones, obviously this team is this UNC team is performing well. They're 9-1 with that one kind of ugly loss to Michigan State. What's the one thing that's surprising you so far about this team? Obviously, we haven't seen everything. They've had some easy competition, but have had some tests on the road as well. What's one big kind of surprise from this UNC squad?
You know, I think it's been the quality play of the freshmen, and quite honestly, and it's not that those guys are going out there and putting up double-doubles every single night or dominating the game, but they are they're serviceable players right now for Carolina. And the fact, I think that those big guys in particular, you know, you heard even Coach Williams in the preseason, you know, joking that you couldn't put them all together and make one ACC player. And while there are still plenty of areas of growth for all of those guys, I think you've seen what can be there in every one of them, whether it's Garrison Brooks or Sterling Manley or Brandon Huffman or whoever. But I think those guys have all shown you at different times things that they are pretty good at right now and things that they need to improve on. But for the most part, they have given Carolina positive things when they've been in the games, or at least they haven't hurt Carolina when they've been in the games. And I'll also throw Andrew Playtech in that mix as well. Even though not a big man, I think he has probably played a little bit more than people thought he might early on. Now, some of that I do think has to do with Cameron Johnson's injury and the fact that he hasn't been available yet, but, you know, Playtech, when he's been out there, has been a very solid player on the floor and, you know, can shoot the basketball, is a smart player. I think he passes the ball very well, kind of within what the team is doing. And so the fact that all those guys have contributed, I think, this early has been a little bit surprising, at least to the level that they have contributed. And now, as Ross, as you said, I mean, I think we're going to learn a lot more, even in this upcoming week with Tennessee, a good Wofford team, and Ohio State. Carolina's going to have to play pretty well to win and compete in those three games. And so I think we'll continue to learn more about the freshmen as we move through this immediate stretch, and then after that, once they get into conference play.
Yeah, and I think Sterling Manley has been the big surprise among those big men. I think Garrison Brooks is kind of giving relatively what we expected. He was the higher-ranked recruit. Sterling Manley looks like a guy that can really develop into a very solid center for UNC. And then, yeah, Playtech has been getting a lot more playing time than I expected, partly because of Cameron Johnson's injury, and I'm sure Brand Robinson and Andrew Playtech's minutes will dip when Johnson comes back. I'm surprised you didn't say anything about Luke May or Kenny Williams as a surprise. I mean, I think those two guys and their play has been incredible, particularly what both have done offensively. Because I think we thought Luke May would be a solid rebounder, but what he's done offensively, along with Kenny Williams kind of shooting and just the fact that he looks so much better than he has the last 2 years, has been a big takeaway of mine.
Sure, but I think one thing, and I agree with you, I think both those guys are contributing at a level maybe higher than you anticipated. But I think most people figured that they would raise their level of play, one, because they were going to have to for Carolina to be successful, two, because they were going to see more minutes than they had in the past just because of the roster makeup and how Carolina is formed this season. And then finally, just because players tend to get better under Roy Williams. I think we've seen that year after year after year, that guys, the older they get, the better they get, and that's how it's supposed to be. And so, I mean, you can take an extreme example like Bryce Johnson, who didn't play very much his freshman year and then was an All-America by the time he was a senior. But to the level that those guys have consistently performed, I do think that has been a little surprising and a pleasant surprise. I mean, anybody who would have said they thought Luke May was going to be averaging 20 points and almost 11 rebounds through 10 games, they wouldn't be telling the truth. And so for those guys to contribute to the consistently high level that they have, I do think has been a pleasant surprise, and it's been needed. I mean, Carolina needs those guys, in addition to Pinson and Joel Berry, to score at a higher level, because that's the role that they have inherited on this year's team.
What have you seen from Jahlik Felton so far this year, Jones? I mean, came in with, of course, the name recognition of just having Felton on the back of the jersey there, and highly rated recruit, which the guys over at Inside Carolina have been keeping us up to date on, of course. But from what you've seen on the court from him and his interaction with Roy so far, seems to certainly be a storyline as well.
Well, I think one of the most telling things about the relationship between Roy Williams and Jahlik Felton is that Roy Williams doesn't let up on Felton, even in a 40-point game with a couple minutes to go, like against Western Carolina. If he, Roy Williams, didn't think that Jahlik Felton could be an extraordinarily high-level player, then he wouldn't hound him the way that he does. And you can see, and I think you've started to see in the last two games, what Jahlik Felton can do offensively. I mean, he has tremendous ball skills. He is, I think, the best passer. He and Pinson, the best two passers on Carolina's team. And he can just do things with the basketball offensively that a lot of guys can't do. He's just skilled in that way. But I think what's been holding him back some is, A, his defense, and even Roy Williams, you know, kind of unprompted on the radio show this past Monday, somebody asked a question about defensive grades, and he said, well, you know, I think Joel Berry or Garrison Brooks, can't quite remember, you know, graded out the best against Western Carolina, and I know Jahlik Felton was the worst, and then the rest of the team was in the middle. And so, I mean, he slid that in there unprompted. And so, you know, the defense has to continue to improve for Felton, and just all the other stuff about being a college player. Jahlik Felton has been able to just be the best guy on the floor for most of his career. And so now I think he's being asked to be a little more accountable in everything that he does, to contribute more on the defensive end of the floor, in addition to all the wonderful things he can do with the basketball. And so I do think that's been a transition for him. But you can tell it's there, and when it, as it continues to develop as this year goes along, and guys, as he gets more minutes now with the injury to Seventh Woods, you know, he's going to have to play more. And so, yeah, I think he will continue to develop, and that development will probably accelerate due to that injury to Seventh.
One more Jahlik note, and I'm not sure Roy was the most thrilled about this, but that poster monster slam that he had at the end of the Stanford game. Were you surprised by the explosiveness that was there, or have you seen it in other places so far on the practice court or whatever the case may be? And did you hear anything from kind of inside the circle there in terms of Roy's happiness level with that decision?
You know, I don't think I was surprised by the explosiveness. I mean, I think anybody who has followed Jahlik Felton or knew about him as a prospect knew that that was in there and that he's that kind of player. But do you expect to see it with 6 seconds left in a 25-point game? Maybe not. But, yeah, that's part of learning, too. And that's also part of basketball. And Roy Williams even said afterwards, you know, that he doesn't mind that you play till the end. I mean, that's part of the game. Now, it also, if you're up by 40 like it was against Western Carolina and you're just trying to keep adding to the point total at the end, maybe you don't need to, but you don't mind playing into the final couple of seconds. And you know, Jahlik Felton is a young guy who is learning in a lot of different ways, and I'm sure that was another learning opportunity for him.
What have you seen from Joel Berry so far? I mean, obviously he's second in the team in scoring. His assist to turnover ratio is is really good, but he's only shooting 36.4% from the field, 36.2% from three, which is pretty good. I think he's obviously been solid, maybe average according to how we kind of look at him now, but you know, obviously he's critical to this team. So what have you seen from Barry, you know, nine games in?
Sure. Yeah, you know, I think Joel has, you know, he's had a couple of really big games. You know, the Stanford game, I feel like maybe Davidson was another one where he really scored at a high level. I don't think he shot the ball as consistently well as he feels like he can or that the Tar Heels feel like he can. And I do think some of that was the hand injury early in the year. You know, he had a couple of really poor shooting games. You know, the first one against Bucknell where he's 1 of 11 from the floor. You know, so that's going to bring your overall percentage down a little bit. But I do think that hand problem is, yeah, continues to be less and less of a factor as the season moves along. But I also think Joel Berry is trying to kind of figure out his way in the best way that he can help the Tar Heels offensively, because look, I mean, he's the most accomplished player that the Tar Heels have on the floor. He is one of the best players that the Tar Heels have on the floor. So, you know, I think he's continuing to find the right time to shoot the right shot, when to drive, when to take it from three, and just continue to find how that role develops as more of one of the lead scorers this year, maybe compared to the last season or two. But I do think that Carolina needs and wants him to shoot at a higher level more consistently, and I'm sure he does as well. Now, all the other stuff, good defense, great leader, fiery guy. I mean, all that kind of stuff is where you would expect it to be from a senior Joel Berry, and to me is just the most important guy that Carolina has on the floor due to his leadership and toughness that he brings to the Tar Heels.
Jones Angel, voice of the Tar Heels, joining us here on Tar Heel Talk 97.9 The Hill, and we are lucky enough to have Jones back with us for another segment after this. Tar Heel Talk 97.9 The Hill, Blake Hodge inside Carolina's Ross Martin, and we've got Jones Angel, voice of the Tar Heels, joining us this week. And Jones, we have 10 games into the season, 9-1 record so far for Carolina. There was a really long road trip in there that culminated with that loss to Michigan State. I know you were kind of back and forth a little bit with football going on and everything. What do you make of what the team looked like before going on that road trip in terms of the type of team that they are versus whenever you get back from a couple of weeks really on the road?
You know, I think the Michigan State performance really kind of dimmed what I thought was a pretty successful trip overall for Carolina, considering the type of team that the Tar Heels have this year and some of the experiences that those young guys were going through for the first time. I mean, played a true road game against a Power 5 opponent a long way away, against Stanford, won that game pretty handily. Against the team, I mean, Stanford's not world beaters this year, but I think an okay team. I thought that Arkansas win in the PK80 event was a really high-quality win, one of the two best wins, I think, for Carolina, along with the Michigan victory that the Tar Heels have right now, and so a really quality win. But then, of course, it's always the yeah, but there was that Michigan State performance. And, you know, Roy Williams asked Coach this on Monday on the radio show, kind of did he weigh more heavily the nine games that you've seen from Carolina against varying levels of competition, but some very good teams in there, like we just mentioned, that the Heels, for the most part, in those nine wins, have played at a pretty consistent level as a team. I mean, pretty close to what they've been able to do win in and win out, if that makes sense. Every one of those nine victories, I think Carolina's played close to the same level, no matter what the team is, the opponent. And then you have that one game where Carolina just looked totally different, totally lost, totally manhandled in that game against Michigan State. So which one do you weigh more heavily? And yeah, and I think not a big surprise from the coaching perspective, he said the Michigan State game, because it's the best team that Carolina's played by far. And it is the poorest performance that Carolina has had by far. And so I think you have to look at that game and say, okay, this is the game, the type of opponent that will most resemble the type of teams that Carolina is going to play in the Atlantic Coast Conference, at least the top-level teams in the Atlantic Coast Conference. So what went wrong in this particular game? How do you get better from that game? Yeah, I had a chance to talk to Theo Pinson, guys, earlier this week. He's going to be on our podcast on Friday, and he talked a lot about how he thought that Michigan State game was a real benefit for the team, and how especially for the young guys to get accustomed to that level of play and understand what you have to do to compete at that level. And so I don't know if we're truly going to know the answer if that game was helpful until Carolina gets a couple weeks into conference play, but they've seen it now, and they know what that level is, and so they know where they need to play to compete in the ACC.
Yeah, I think that Michigan State game was a huge wake-up call just for the freshmen and younger players to kind of see where they really are in terms of the whole scheme of college basketball, and there's a lot of better teams out there. Duke included that they're going to face twice as well. You know, looking ahead of the schedule, Tennessee looms on Sunday, Wofford the following Wednesday, Ohio State on December 23rd, and then it's ACC play. What have you seen out of Tennessee? I don't know if you've done much research on them, and Ohio State as well. Looking at the next kind of five games, Tennessee, Wofford, Ohio State, Wake Forest, Florida State, any perspective on those games and what kind of remains for UNC to close out kind of this, I guess, calendar year?
Sure. You know, I haven't looked a ton at Ohio State just because it is a couple games in the future, although certainly seen the Buckeyes a couple of times this year. I know they have, you know, new coaching staff with Chris Holtman there, you know, coming over from Butler. They've had a couple of tough losses, but I know they've had a couple of nice wins. Came from way behind to beat Michigan in a game in Big Ten conference play. So I think they're a team that's kind of finding their way a little bit in a new staff, but also a team that has, you know, with some of these same players that, you know, beat Kentucky a couple years ago in the CBS Sports Classic. So they'll be able to compete in that game down in New Orleans for sure, and it'll be a test for the Tar Heels right there before Christmas. Now for Tennessee, this is a huge challenge, I think, for Carolina. I think second best team the Tar Heels have played this year behind Michigan State. It is the biggest home game, non-conference home game, that Tennessee has had in forever. They've already sold out the arena. It's very similar size, very similar building actually to the Smith Center. 21,000 plus. They've sold it out. They're checkerboarding the stands. So their fans are fired up. I mean, this is first time Carolina's been there in a long, long, long time. I mean, in the modern era, first time that the Tar Heels have been in Knoxville. So they'll be excited to see the Tar Heels. They have a good team, and they have a coach in Rick Barnes who clearly is an established and accomplished coach, and a guy who's given Carolina trouble in the past. It's an athletic team that will happily run with Carolina, move up and down the floor, and it's a really, I think, an impressive group early in this year. They have a win against NC State. They have a road win at Georgia Tech. Their only loss is to Villanova, which was by 9 points, and they led that game by double figures at halftime against Villanova, who's now, of course, number one in the country. So this is a really stiff test, I think, for Carolina. And, you know, Coach Williams said on Monday night, you know, he kind of challenged some of his teams. He said, you guys are going to get hit in the face in this game, and I think it's time to find out who's going to respond and who's going to curl up on the floor in the fetal position. And that's almost an exact quote from what Coach Williams said on Monday night. And so I think this is a real measuring stick game for Carolina. I know the Tar Heels are ranked higher and all that stuff, But I think this is a real test for Carolina to kind of see where they are at this point of the season.
For sure. And then this kind of moves us to Cam Johnson, obviously the grad transfer from Pitt, three-point shooter, comes in around 6'8". He got, you know, the surgery was 4 weeks ago on Wednesday, and we're recording this on Wednesday. It's going to air on Thursday. Is there anything you know about his status? Obviously, the thing we were given was 4 to 6 weeks, so that put him kind of back on December 27th. UNC plays Wake Forest on December 30th, and obviously not going to rush him back, and there was no sense in doing that. When do you think that he comes back, or do you have any idea there? And then additionally, how does UNC kind of work him in? Because I don't think he's going to start initially. I don't think, even if Kenny Williams keeps playing the way he is, I don't think Cam Johnson is going to break that lineup.
Yeah, and let me preface my answer by saying I do not know anything on the official side of things about Cam Johnson's return status. So anything that I'm about to say as far as that is concerned is strictly my opinion. It is in no way an official statement. But I think that Wake Forest game is kind of the hope is that Cam Johnson can start to be available for Carolina in that time period, whether it's that one or the next game after the new year against Florida State, you know, but somewhere right at the beginning of ACC play seems to be the goal and the hope for Cameron Johnson as far as when he returns. Now, Ross, I think your point about how they work him in is an interesting one, because this is not, I think what makes this a bigger challenge is this is not a guy who all the other players know really well on the floor. You know, I think it's one thing if you have, you know, working Joelberry back in, for example, because Joelberry's been there. He's played with a majority of these guys, at least the returnees. You know, they know his game. They know how he fits in. That's one thing. But you're working in a guy now in Cameron Johnson who has been nothing but a terrific teammate. Don't get me wrong in that regard. But Carolina just hasn't seen him on the floor very much as a Tar Heel. Yeah, he played in the exhibition games. He played through the preseason practices. But he just hasn't been out there with this group very often. And so, yeah, how do you work him in? How does he best fit back in? You know, what combination of players on the floor does he fit best with? Yeah, I don't think Carolina knows any of those answers yet, because they just haven't had the ability to see it. And so I think it will take maybe a little bit longer than you would anticipate to work him into the flow and make him most effective, have him help the team most effectively. I just think it's going to take a little more time than normal, because he is such a new player in the system and into this team this particular season.
Yeah, I think it's a super intriguing storyline when he does come back, you know, how he works in with Kenny Williams and Theo Pinson. I think they kind of rotate those three guys as kind of a three players for two spots, and you'll see Robinson and Platik's numbers go down when the grad transfer comes in. I remember one thing I think I heard on your radio show, I think it was Monday, Roy kind of had deep concerns about the defense of the freshman big men and UNC's interior defense as well. I'm not a big defense guy. You know, I'm kind of just, you know, let's get the bucket in the basket. It's kind of hard to break it down.
Bucket in the basket.
Greg Barnes loves kind of writing about defense. And so what do you think about that? Because I think that's kind of concerning that Roy is pretty open about those concerns, because obviously they were exposed against Michigan State.
No question. I think it is the number one concern from Coach Williams right now. I think it is the number one concern for Carolina right now. And that is, yeah, how to defend the post just one-on-one. It's something that Carolina does not like to double-team very often. They just don't do it very much. Roy Williams thinks you should be able to guard your guy and stop him. And I think you've seen not just Michigan State. I mean, Bucknell's big man had a good game offensively. Wagner, who is a skilled player, don't get me wrong. I mean, these guys are good players. Even the kid from Bucknell, I think, is a good player. But there have been big numbers from the opposition in the post. And whether that is in just a true throw it to him down on the block and let him try to score, or like in the case of Wagner from Michigan and the young man, I think Reed was his last name, from Stanford, you know, a lot of times they were getting the ball at the high post or the top of the key, and they drive against those big men and make them guard out on the floor, and were able to take advantage of them some in that regard. And so Carolina has to be able to figure out a way to slow the production, because the quality, the consistent quality of big men that they're about to start seeing, really, I think, starting with Tennessee and then all the way through, maybe not Wofford, but pretty much everybody else after that, there's going to be some really good big guys, and Carolina's going to have to figure out a way to slow them down, because the Tar Heels aren't going to shoot 16 to 22 from three-point range every game. And so they need to figure out a way to slow that down. And you're right, Ross, the fact that Roy Williams is as open a head coach about his thoughts, I think, of any coach in the country, particularly one as successful as he has been. So you know when he's saying it that is he's not just saying it to try to send some sneaky message or, you know, go around some crazy way. That's what he thinks. And he thinks that his team is not going to be nearly as good as he feels like it can be if they don't play better in the post defensively.
Are you saying that Roy Williams is more open than Larry Fedora?
You know what? Some of that is the sport. You know how football coaches are. But yes, I would say of those two, yes, I would give the nod to Coach Williams.
Well, speaking of Fedora, we do want to just get your thoughts on the year of the injury that was the 2017 Carolina football season.
Sure. You know, I think, number one, obviously, disappointing just in the full body of work. I mean, 3-9 with both a couple of ugly losses, most notably that Virginia Tech one, and some games where the Tar Heels were close, you know, and couldn't seal the deal, couldn't finish things at the end. So the total body of work, 3-9, certainly disappointing. But I think also two other things. Number one is anybody who watched Carolina football from start to finish, I think understands that the team was playing its best at the end of the year. There were still limitations. There were still challenges. But the last, I'll say, four games, Miami, even though it was a loss, then Pittsburgh, then Western, and then NC State, I thought Carolina was playing at a significantly more consistent level than it did in the previous eight games. Again, still that, I mean, even in those four games, they were 2-2. But I think the level of play was at a consistently higher level. And for that, I think you need to give a ton of credit to, number one, Larry Fedora and his staff, and number two, the players for not checking out. I think after that 59-7 game against Virginia Tech, it would have been really easy to go, you know what, forget this. And I think guys could have just started mailing it in. I think they could have not practiced hard. I think they could have taken plays off and just not cared at that point. But to their credit, to the coach's credit, everybody stayed involved in what they were doing, and I think you saw some growth there. And so part two of that is I also think in those last couple of games, you started to see what was there in the future. Because I think at one point in the middle of this year, not only was Carolina losing, but I think people are going, gosh, is this going to get any better anytime soon? Like, what's there to get better? But I think you started to see that in the last couple of weeks. I think Carolina's defensive line got a lot better with a lot of returning parts in that particular group. I think you saw some of those young offensive players, Bo Corrales, Michael Carter, Nathan Elliott. I think you saw some of those guys, Daz Newsome, Anthony Ratliff Williams. You saw what was there. And so you can see where that will continue to grow in this offseason and moving towards next year. And next year is a really important one for Carolina. You can survive 1-3-9 when there's as many injuries as there are. But you don't want to start falling into a longer-term rut. And so I think next season will be an important one for Carolina, and one I know they're already working towards. And, of course, the early signing day next week is a big day for Carolina and everybody across college football. And so already I think the Heels have turned their eyes to 2018.
Who is the starting quarterback against in 2018, I guess, against Cal in that opening game?
Whoever.
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I think it's going to – I'll give you an either-or, right? I mean, I think Nathan Elliott and Chaz Surratt have given you enough body of work that they deserve a chance to compete for that position. I don't think there's any question that Carolina played at a higher level with Nathan Elliott at the quarterback spot at the end of the year. I also don't think that there's any question that Chaz Surratt has the physical tools that are a little more unique in what he is able to do. Personally, again, I have not asked Chaz this. I think he lost his confidence a little bit this year. Just he was taking such a physical beating kind of in the middle portion of the season that I think he kind of got down a little bit, and it was a tough stretch there. And to Nathan Elliott's tremendous credit as the third-string guy, he came in, and when his number was called, he was ready, and he made Carolina a better football team. So I think both those guys certainly have the right to compete for that position. I know Carolina has a good young quarterback coming in as a true freshman as well, or at least signed or at least committed to come in. And so I'll be interested to see how that plays out. But I certainly think both those guys are going to get a chance to grab that position and see what happens.
What's the podcast coming up? What's on the docket, and how do people listen to it?
Yeah, sure. It's the Carolina Insider. You know, we continue to have a really good time with that show. And like I mentioned, Theo Pinson is our guest coming up on Friday. Talk to Theo some about this year, about the championship game from a year ago. Really good stuff from him, talking about kind of his mindset after the second injury last year, after he had returned and then got hurt again, and kind of the things that were going through his mind, and a lot of cool stories as well from Theo about this particular, you know, this season to this point as well. And so really looking forward to people hearing that. And then we're trying to get some football action going next week as well, to chat about the signing class that Carolina signs in that early signing period next week. So a lot of good stuff coming up. And Carolina Insider Insider is the name. It's on iTunes. It's on Stitcher. It's on iHeartRadio. It's on TuneIn. So you can listen in a bunch of different ways.
All right, that is Jones Angel. You can listen to him on the 17th here on 97.9 The Hill as Carolina will be taking on Tennessee, the Volunteers over in Knoxville, and you get to have a Carolina fan base interact with another Rick Barnes coach team, which is always always a lot of fun. You heard Jones mention the early signing day there. We'll talk about that whenever we come back to wrap up Tar Heel Talk on 97.9 The Hill. Final segment of Tar Heel Talk, 97.9 The Hill. Inside Carolina's Ross Martin is over there. I'm Blake Hodge here with WCHL. And we've got a little bit of a different setup this year. First off, thanks again to Jones Angel for hanging out with us for a big chunk of the program today. But we're going into some new territory here, Ross, with college football in general. It's always been that whatever it is, the second Wednesday in February or whatever.
First Wednesday in February.
For signing day. It's National Signing Day. It's a whole celebration. It's an event. It's a holiday in the college football world. That's different this year because they've opened this early signing period, which begins here just before Christmas for 3 days, I believe it is. So basketball has had this for a while where they've got two signing periods and they've kind of leveled out where few guys sign at the beginning and some guys wait and see where people end up, see who might leave to go to the NBA draft or whatever the case may be. How is this going to impact recruiting for Carolina, do you think? And are you expecting most of the people that are verbally committed to Carolina to sign during this December period?
I think for a team like North Carolina that does not recruit at an extremely high level, like a top 10 team, Bama, Auburn, you know, the Texas A&M, Florida State teams, Ohio State. I think for a team like that, kind of a mid-level Power 5 conference team, you'll see the majority of their commits who are already committed sign on this new signing period starting December 20th. The date will obviously change a little bit each year, but the 72-hour period. And I think overall that is good for teams like Carolina and most teams because it locks in your class and you just have less time you have to worry about, less chances for guys to be wishy-washy and take official visits in January to other schools. Especially if you don't have a coaching change, you can kind of lock in and maybe poach a player here and there from teams that are having coaching issues. And it kind of locks in your class earlier than you would have had previously in February. Yeah. Again, multiple players will enroll in January like usual. That will happen with a lot of UNC players. I think both quarterback commits will enroll early along with some other players. But then the ones who are not enrolling early can still sign, and they'll just be committed, have their national letter of intent in starting December 20th, and then enroll in usually it's June, first part of June for the first summer session. Sometimes it's later, it just depends, or early, it just depends on kind of the schooling and class and stuff like that. It is a big change, and it kind of has, you've seen kind of a rush of commits recently, whereas previously that rush of commits comes more in January and February as that signing day nears. So it's all about kind of when that signing day is, depending, and that makes the change of when players commit and sign.
So what you mentioned quarterbacks that are committed, and that's changed recently.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been a whole back-and-forth saga with Carolina quarterback commits this year. Where do we stand right now?
Yeah, so UNC lost Tyler Shook, a guy who committed in June to UNC, a four-star stud out of Arizona. He decommitted and committed to Oregon.
Under Willie Taggart, who is now gone.
Yeah, but I think he's staying with
it
Oregon.
Seems like it, but I was just like,
it was odd. And so what happened, I mean, UNC was going to sign two. They need to sign two. So they already have this guy named Jace Reuter out of Kansas committed. He's going to enroll early and sign on December 20th. He's been good. And they recently, this weekend, I believe it was either Thursday or Friday, they got a commitment from a guy named Cade Fortin, a 6'2", 207-pound pro-style quarterback out of Suwanee, Georgia, at North Gwinnett High School. He was a Texas A&M commit. Mm. He did committed when Kevin Sumlin got fired there, kind of opened up his recruitment. UNC swooped in, visited him. He scheduled an official visit and locked him in.
You can get a lot more from Ross and the rest of the Inside Carolina team about recruiting and get all the way caught up on this new little window that's open here.
Yeah, we'll have complete coverage, big-time coverage. We're kind of treating this as the National Signing Day, whereas it used to be February. That will coming up on December 20th.
InsideCarolina.com for all that information. He is Ross Martin from InsideCarolina.com. I'm Blake Hodge here with WCHL. This is Tar Heel Talk on 97.9 The Hill.